Okay, it's congregational participation time. I'm going to say a famous phrase, and then at least I'll start it, and then I'd like for you to finish it, and the choir too, please, if you don't mind, and speak it aloud so that the folks at home can hear, and if you're watching at home, I guess just yell it into your computer screen. So I'm going to start a phrase, you finish. Okay, here we go. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but
angels
never. All right, good. It is better to have loved and lost than great minds. Good. Okay, one more. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. Okay, okay. I think this is gonna work because some of you have seen the movie, some of you haven't. So what movie is that line? Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. What movie is that from?
Forrest Gump.
Okay. So if you have seen that movie, you can probably picture Forrest in his beige suit sitting on a park bench, offering chocolates to strangers and using that line, life is like a box of chocolates, you never know what you're going to get, as a way of describing being surprised by life and all of its unpredictable but delicious moments. And if you are around other people who have seen that movie and that quote has entered into your common social lexicon, you might even be able to shorten it to just, life is like a box of chocolates. And the other people will still know that you are what you are referring to. Ah, yes, life is very unpredictable, isn't it? But if I were to say, life is like a box of chocolates to my kids who have not seen Forrest Gump, the meaning of my words, especially in the shorthand, would likely be lost. They would have to infer meaning from other sources, the context, the tone of my voice, what I say before or after. And they might get my intended meaning wrong. They might think that I'm making a statement about life being a constant struggle with temptation, or that, I don't know, life is gooey. Without the common social lexicon, an unexamined understanding won't suffice. More digging is required. And this probably won't shock you, but the same thing happens when we read the Bible. Without digging and discernment, it is very easy to misinterpret and misunderstand original intention, sometimes with severe implications for us and our communities. Now, of all the Bible verses taken out of context and used to justify an oppressive status quo, you always have the poor with you, but you don't always have me, from our gospel reading today, is right up there. Over the centuries of Christendom, countless sermons and doctrines and practices have been founded on the basis of the misreading of this statement in John 12, as a prediction that poverty can't be defeated, so there is no point in trying. It is a misinterpretation that sets up an unhealthy conflict between acts of worship and acts of charity, where some voices say, why would we spend all that money on the building or the organ when there are hungry people out on the streets? And other voices call back saying, why would we spend money on people who can't stand on their own two feet and contribute to the life of the community? Worship versus charity is a conflict that too often plays out amongst us, amongst those who seek to follow Jesus. And on first reading, it would seem to be a conflict that Jesus himself feeds into. It looks like he's picked a horse in this race. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. Life is like a box of chocolates. Let's do some digging here. The well-known text of Mary anointing Jesus' feet with costly perfume and Jesus' rebuke for not using the money to help the poor takes place in the town of Bethany, in the house of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. In fact, in John's gospel, it is the raising of Lazarus that sets all the pieces in motion for what will culminate in Jerusalem in what we know as Holy Week. Just days before this, Jesus was summoned to Bethany, only to find that Lazarus was already dead. Mary threw herself at his feet and wept. And Jesus wept too, deep, bitter tears over the loss of his dear friend. And overcome by the moment, he cries out into the tomb, "Lazarus, Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth. As you can imagine, this raising of Lazarus caused quite a stir within Bethany, which is only 2 miles from the city of Jerusalem. And when the leaders of the city heard about this miraculous event and all the tension this Jesus was receiving, they called an emergency council meeting and said to each other, "What are we going to do? This man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation." So from that day on, the leaders planned to put him to death. John 11:48-53. There in Bethany, the threat of death hung in the air like mist in the mountains. But of all in the town, it is only Mary that is able to sense it. She is the one who discerns what Jesus' act of love for her brother has set in motion. She is the one who takes the perfume very likely purchased to anoint her brother's dead body and instead anoints Jesus. She picks up his dusty, calloused feet in her soft hands and gently pours the oil, lets the fragrance fill the room, then wipes it away with her hair. We are so vulnerable when someone touches our feet. All that we keep secret is revealed. There is nowhere to hide in this kind of intimacy. It is a moment of absolute trust. Mary anoints Jesus. The perfume wafts through the air. Jesus' body softens. The angst of anticipation, the fear of what is ahead, the weight of the coming cross is released into Mary's gentle hands. It is an act of gratitude. It is an act of worship. It is an act of love. The text goes on to say that into this deeply holy moment, it is broken into by Judas, the one who was about to betray him, who crows into the room, "Why was this perfume not sold and the money given to the poor?" He said this, we are told, not because he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief. To which Jesus said, "Leave her alone. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." What is too often interpreted as a prediction that poverty can't be defeated is anything but. In fact, it is the opposite. But perhaps we don't catch it because Jesus is using shorthand here. He is using shorthand for a passage in Deuteronomy that his followers and the early readers of John's gospel would know very well. But for those of us not as schooled in the Hebrew scriptures, for those of us with a different social lexicon, it's like saying life is like a box of chocolates to someone who hasn't seen the movie. Perhaps we miss the intended meaning. It requires some digging on our part to understand that when Jesus says, "You always have the poor with you," he is quoting part of a longer passage in Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15 is God's statement to the nation that out of God's generosity and the bounty of creation, there should be plenty for all. There should not be poverty in the land. Poverty is against God's intentions for humanity. The only reason there are poor in God's abundant creation is because of human sin and self-centeredness and disobedience to God's will. God therefore demands open-handed generosity as God has been generous. This is the passage that Jesus is quoting. if among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and offer him sufficient for his need. For the poor you will always have with you. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. This is what Jesus is saying to Judas, this thief who closes his fist tight around the money bag, who, despite his words, does not care about the poor, who sees not abundance but scarcity, and in so doing, stirs up conflict between acts of worship and acts of charity that we are still dealing with today. Be open-handed. Be generous. Be thankful for all that God has done in creation in your life. Be open-handed. Mary gets it. She understands and acts in turn. Another thing we may not pick up on with a superficial reading is that Mary's act of gratitude and faith foreshadows and perhaps even inspires actions Jesus himself will soon take. The Greek word for Mary's wiping of Jesus' feet, ekmasso, is also the same word that John uses in the passage we will read here on Maundy Thursday to describe Jesus' act of wiping the disciples' feet in John 13:5. These two passages are linked. Mary anoints Jesus in Bethany. Then 6 days later, Jesus anoints the disciples in the upper room in Jerusalem. They're linked. Mary demonstrates the type of intimate service that Jesus will replicate and teach his disciples to perform for each other, modeling this same moment of safety and vulnerability and trust. Jesus will anoint them as he has been anointed. He takes their feet in his hands. All pretenses and protections melt away, and he gives them his final commandment. Love one another. Love one another as I have loved you. This is how they will know that you are my disciples, that you love one another. The mission, the movement, the church that forms in his name should be one of love, open-handed, full-hearted, humble, generous disciples that live out God's intention found in Deuteronomy 15, that out of God's generosity and the bounty of creation within a culture of open-heartedness, there will be plenty, plenty for all. The perceived conflict between acts of worship and acts of charity and service is a foolish one. If we are solely focused on service and justice-making activities, our hearts can become hardened over the greed and iniquity that we will encounter, and we will miss the awe and wonder of this life where the appropriate response to God's grace is to fall down on our knees in gratitude. If we exclusively focus on our individual worship experience, our spiritual life can become sanitary and soulless, all about me and my needs, self-centered and completely contrary to God's intentions found in Torah and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mary anoints Jesus. Jesus anoints the disciples. Those disciples who, empowered by the Holy Spirit, continued on in his name, took seriously his open-handed commandment to love one another. In the book of Acts, we read, "And God's grace was so powerfully at work in them that there were no needy persons among them. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from those sales and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone in need." There were no needy persons among them. Poverty was eradicated in their midst in accordance with God's dream for humanity. This is the natural and radical outcome of taking seriously Jesus' commandment to love one another. Thursday is a special day around here at Metropolitan. Throughout the winter, a dedicated group of volunteers and staff have put on a community meal each week where a hearty hot lunch and often home-baked cookies have been offered out the front doors of the church. Chairs are put out outside, community forums. We even had a jazz duo offering some music. This past Thursday was the last week of the winter meal, and we now move into our summer programming, which is a simpler meal that will be offered down in the park. But running concurrently to these meal programs is another program, a foot care clinic in the basement, run in partnership with some other downtown churches. Each Thursday, a licensed chiropodist works on the feet of those in our community living on the streets, shelters, and other precarious situations where taking care of one's feet is difficult or impossible. The clients often come in pain, unable to walk long distances, sometimes not even able to stand on their feet for any length of time. They are often embarrassed to show their feet. Some are not used to feeling a tender touch on their skin. They are not used to being cared for in such an intimate way. Many weep. Through the safe space offered by the chiropodist and this church, this can be a transformational experience. We hear often that having their feet cared for in this way is the most important thing they have done for their physical, mental, and even spiritual well-being in a very long time. Being cared for in this way opens up space in other ways. A person can reclaim agency and improve their life, other appointments they can keep, housing applications they can file, jobs they can apply for. If we want people to stand on their own two feet first, they need to be able to stand on their own two feet. It is remarkable how one act of love can empower a person, can empower a church to more fully realize God's dream for God's children. A defining characteristic of the early church that formed after Jesus' death was not that it simply served the poor, but that it fully included the poor, that there was safe and supportive space within the worshiping community for both poor and rich, men and women, slave and free, for all who approached with open hands and an open heart. Mary anointed Jesus. Jesus anointed the disciples and sent them into the world to continue his work, to love as he had loved, to be his incorruptible and mystical body that could never die, to be his hands and feet in the world. The 16th century Christian mystic Teresa of Avila wrote these well-known words: "Christ has no body now but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes through which he looks compassion onto this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. You are the hands through which he blesses all the world. You are the hands. You are the feet. You are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body now on earth but yours." In these tight-fisted days defined by suspicion and greed and unhealthy conflict, I often wonder how I am being called to be Christ's hands and feet in the world, how I should be, what I should do. Perhaps you wonder this too. If so, faith invites you to dig deep, discern, pray, and the most important thing is to allow yourself to be vulnerable before Christ, to let your body soften under his gentle touch. Unclench your fists. Open your heart. Do not be afraid to weep. Allow him to anoint you and to send you out to love as you are loved deeply and completely.